Someone told you knee pain is just getting older? They were wrong. The Joint Relief Institute offers fast joint pain relief covered by Medicare. Call 708-888-0000, as in zero pain.
You're listening to Steve Bertrand on books. Okay, just my opinion here, but Clay Kane has written a pretty remarkable book in a personal and novel way. It's called Burn Down Master's House. It's a fictionalized account of a variety of moments of resistance by American slaves in the days before the Civil War. He fictionalizes each of the stories so they form their own strand into one narrative. As a descendant of slaves himself, he also uses the names of some of his ancestors in this book. But there's more here than just 19th century men and women freeing themselves of their chains. Burn Down Master's House is calling on us to unchain ourselves as well. Clay, welcome.
Oh, thank you for having me. It's an honor to be here.
Yeah, a fantastic response to this book. I know it's been out several months now.
Yeah.
I want to start with some influences with you. First, your parents. Your parents were divorced, and which prompted in the fact that you then grew up in two very different parts of the country, right? One was in rural Northwest. The other was, as I recall, in Philly. But you probably grew up with very different American experiences.
Mm. Yeah, well, to be fair, my parents were never married. Thank
okay,
God.
Yeah.
Thank God that would have been a mistake. But yeah, I grew up mainly in West Philadelphia, but I did spend a lot of time on the West Coast in Washington State, an area called Vancouver, Washington. This was in the 1980s. So you are right. I did see two different Americas, Steve. I did see two different experiences. And living in Washington State in the 1980s, this may surprise some people because you think of it being so liberal. I experienced an enormous amount of racism from teachers, from people in my neighborhood. I was called the N-word so much, I thought it was my name. That's actually a Malcolm X quote, but I can relate to it. And then moving back home to Philadelphia, a lot of the angst around race went away because I was around folks who looked like me.
Right.
But Philadelphia had its own set of issues. It was the drug wars. It was the 80s and 90s. It was crime. It was all these things, horrible politics and so on. So I remember being really impacted by the two different worlds that I saw and lived in, but still very grateful because it gave me a certain kind of perspective that I think is very unique, being in Washington State and Philadelphia. It's very unique.
And they both pushed reading, right? So you were reading in both homes.
Oh, goodness. My mother would read to me from as young as I can remember. And then at a certain point, I began reading back to her. And I began writing short stories. I think a lot of writers begin as short story. You know, when you're a kid, writing silly short stories. And then when I would go back home to Philadelphia, my grandfather, he didn't learn how to read until his 40s. He was from the Jim Crow South of Gooseland, Virginia. He would have me sit on the stoop and read to people. And all the elders in my block would be so proud of me being a good reader and writer. Mm. So that was really instilled in me very young.
Another guy I want to ask you about is a guy you dropped out of college and were working in New York City. And your boss there said, you need to go back and finish your degree.
Yes, I was working at a nonprofit in New York City. And, you know, listen, Steve, I was at that point, I was young. I just felt like college doesn't matter. These systems don't matter. They're just none of it matters. But he said, you have to go back to school. Just at least go back for one semester. I was 23, 24, and I went back, and this time I loved it. And my first course was an intro to African American studies, and that changed my life because I was intro. Yes,
that is the last of my This Is Your Life guests I wanted to ask you about. Right, Zane Abdullah was the teacher,
Dr. Zane Abdullah, who now is at Temple University. That first day in that class, I was invigorated. I always hated history. I didn't really understand it. It didn't make sense to me. But learning about people who look like me, learning about people who were the real heroes, not George Washington and so on, but folks like John Brown, an amazing white abolitionist, like learning that there were people of all backgrounds fighting against this vile institution of slavery. that changed my life, and that just cracked my world open and turned me into basically what I am now. But I had a little, I had bits and pieces of it when I was younger. When I was 14, my mother said, "You can go see the Malcolm X movie, but you got to read the book first." Mm-hmm. Right? I read Roots when I was a kid. There was parts of me that was really impacted. But as far as really studying and learning and absorbing, it changed me at Rutgers University, Newark in New Jersey.
And so look at those people who were in your life, particularly the boss in New York City. I just love that. I don't know if he knows the impact that he has had on you, but I'm sure he'd be proud if he did.
Yeah, yeah.
You said something else, and maybe this was in an interview, just bringing up Roots. I grew up as a child watching Roots on TV, and I had never really considered Gone with the Wind, you write, that it poisoned,
yes,
it poisoned generations of Americans when it comes to the Civil War and to slavery. Yeah. And I had never thought about that until then.
Oh, yeah. Listen, the way media, even, you know, we think of media only now as television, radio, and social media. But back then, as you know, Steve, way before our time, it was very powerful. Even the advertisements, the way they will portray Black folks in sure. Congress during Reconstruction, even when they leave Congress, Birth of a Nation, which was screened at the White House famously, and Gone with the Wind. I mean, that romanticized the South. It made it seem like it wasn't that bad, and it remixed this idea of who the villain is, and it really had an impact on the way that we learn about history. Now, one could say, listen, just look into a book, but Gone with the Wind, I think it may still hold the record. I think maybe broke with Avatar. At that point, that was the movie that sold the most tickets in U.S. history. And they held that record for decades.
Yeah, I mean, it was still playing in movie theaters when I was in high school.
Right,
I mean,
right.
It would come back, and that would have been the 70s. Yeah, it would have been the 70s.
And I'm, you know what?
I'm thinking of the scene with Shirley Temple dancing with the Black man.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah. And you know what? I never saw that movie until I was an adult. My mother did not let me watch that movie. Very interesting. These are the things that have really impacted us. And you know what I've been saying, Steve, is that if we would have learned this version of American chattel slavery and burned down Master's house, I think we'd be a much different country. I think part of the reason why we have these issues today is because we keep sanitizing. You know, in Germany, young people learn about Nazi Germany at a very early age. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't see Adolf Hitler High School in Nazi Germany. So part of the reason why I wrote this book was to burn down misinformation, burn down disinformation, burn down these tropes, not just for the young kid that I was many, many years ago, but for other people who are just learning this history or don't know these names and know the truth about, of course, historical fiction, Thaddeus Stevens or so on. Like the truth, I know it sounds trite, it would free us. We'd be in a much different space culturally and politically and socially if the truth was centered, not a Gone with the Wind remix version.
The name of the book is Burn Down Master's House. And it tells a number of stories of real life people whose lives are fictionally, correct me when I go wrong here,
correct,
intertwined for the book.
Yes.
And it involves slavery in Goochland, Virginia, where you say your family is from, was from, and also some real life ancestors of you are in this book, at least by name. Explain that for me.
So the main characters are based off real people via news articles, sometimes just quotes, archival documents, court records, all of that. But the secondary characters, for the most part, more or less, the majority of them are named after my ancestors in Goochland, Virginia, according to my ancestry tree. Solomon, Miss Emily, Larkin. These are all the folks in my ancestry tree. I was just in Virginia for a book tour stop last week. It was amazing to be there. And I was talking to one of my cousins who's a lot older than me. And he said, I still have a picture of my grandmother working on the Dover Plantation in Goochland. Now, I call it Magnolia Row, but it was actually called the Dover Plantation. So my This book is about lifting up memory and lifting up history, but there is something in my ancestry in this book. I don't know their stories. It appears that Larkin fought in the Civil War, and I have a tie to that in Burned Down Master's House. So it is my grandfather would be so proud that I lifted up Gooseland. Folks think that it's fictional, Gooseland, which like I just
right,
the name. Up. But yeah, it sounds almost fictional, right? But no, it's a real place that had brutal American chattel slavery. So there's a lot of layers in there that every character feels very personal to me.
You mentioned Larkin, and as I recall, Larkin is a fictional name married to a real person named Charity, correct?
Yes, yes.
Okay.
Her actual husband's name was Nate, but I already had a Nathaniel in the book, so I just changed his name to one of my ancestors just for storytelling purposes. But her actual husband's name was Nate. Yeah,
she did all the right things to become legalized in Pennsylvania.
Yeah,
but the high court of the state turned her down. So the idea was if you spent 6 months in Pennsylvania, you were freed. And she did it incrementally and was challenged by the slave owner in Maryland, I think it was, and was defeated in court. But the person who represented the slave owner was a guy who would go on to become an abolitionist, right? I mean, it was Thaddeus Stevens was the lawyer there, went on to become a member of Congress and an abolitionist.
Thaddeus Stevens, one of the greatest advocates of abolitionism, being an abolitionist, rather, a great advocate for in our history that we know of. But what makes him a star in Pennsylvania, his first case going to the PA Supreme Court, is the enslaving of Charity Butler. And I've read a lot of biographies on Thaddeus Stevens, and they only give about two sentences to Charity Butler. This was the chapter that I had the most to work with. I found the court records from the case. And I wanted to remind people that these folks are complicated and we can't see them through one lens. And my hope is as people read this book and the book spreads like fire, if you will, that folks will remember Charity Butler, her two children, Harriet and Sophia, who were born free, were enslaved when she is re-enslaved. Because in the book, I have it for 15 years, but she was free for 10 years. And this slave owner, Norman Bruce, fought for a decade with Thaddeus Stevens by his side to re-enslave this family. It is, I knew about this many, many years ago when I was in college, but it is one of the pieces I'm so proud of this work that, not to be dramatic, but I felt like almost Charity was coming through me writing this because her story should be known and the complications of her story
to be known. The daughters raised free and reclaimed, not even reclaimed, but claimed years after they entered adolescence, I guess. Luke and Henry was a touching story as well.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me.
Yeah, Luke and Henry, that is based on two lines I read from a book called Taboo, Homosexuality in Black Communities. And they talk about homosexuality during American chattel slavery. And there isn't a lot to work with those two. But we do know that one of them was chained to his quote unquote enslaver's bed. And it appears he was severely sexually assaulted. And another one, Henry, talks about sexual assault as well. I wanted to include that because, one, we don't talk about sexual assault against men during American chattel slavery. But I also wanted to, it's done very, very little, show that there were even LGBT folks in slavery. And what did it look like for them? And how did they fight? So that chapter especially, it anchors the book. But it's about radical love. It's about radical hope. It isn't about the sex or the sexuality. These two men found each other and they inspired each other. As I say in the book, one flame sparks 1,000 fires. So some folks have gotten offended by it.
But oh, it's really? Nothing.
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely, Steve. Yeah.
In what way?
Just, you know, why did he have to put, you know, gay people in this book? The whole woke argument, all of that stuff. But it's about love. It's nothing explicit. it's nothing, you know, over
you're
nothing.
You're gay, Craig.
I'm a gay man. Exactly. I'm a gay man.
Yeah.
Nothing pornographic at all.
No,
it's how these two people found love. And there's other love stories in the book as well. But that was expected considering where we are right now. But I'm so proud of it. And I'm so proud that people, these names are lifted in this way and being able to show that thread. So in my own way, you know, I was really inspired by, when I was in college, books of the Harlem Renaissance from Margaret Walker and Arna Bontemps and Richard Wright. And so I see this book as my literary act of resistance. And Luke and Henry, they're a part of that.
I want to go back to Luke and Henry's relationship in that it's a union. It's a union of two souls.
Yes.
Regardless of their gender, I guess. But I just used the word souls. I wasn't planning to right away. But when you refer to the slaves by something other than their name, you call them souls throughout the book, which clearly had to be a decision, conscious decision. Talk to me about that.
So in the narration, I rarely ever call them slaves. Mm-hmm. I really, slaves working. No, souls. In the dialogue, I'll use the word slave, but I wanted to show that they were human. They were not just property. They had dreams and aspirations and hopes. And we all have, especially when you're young, we all have these hopes. We all want to survive. So I wanted to frame their humanity. And I also felt like with this book, it really comes from the perspective of the souls of the enslaved people. It's not the perspective of the enslavers. So I figured if it was their perspective, how would they see themselves versus how the white characters would see them? And so I centered it around them. I also don't use the N word one time in this book.
Right.
I did not want to write a book about slavery and the N word is every other page. I'm trying to do something different here. This is not another slave story. This is a story of souls, of rebellion, of resistance that I think we all can be activated and triggered by. So that was very intentional. And it also flows, slave, souls, like it also just flows and it feels right. And so many folks have brought that up to me. And I'm very proud of, again, being able to center their humanity.
Well, if I could co-opt it and maybe rewrite your story, you know, my big thing lately is we're all us.
Yes.
You know, we're all us. And so you might have written about that slaveholder who had Luke chained to his bed as a soul. I mean, I can understand why you didn't, but you know, we're all one people and we need to start seeing ourselves like that. And I think this book, it really does that in a way of that I haven't read in a long time.
Mm. Wow. Well, listen, I agree with you. And I wanted to show the connectivity, the thread to your point of us, that I do believe we are all connected. And that's why part of this book, I don't focus on one point of view, one person's story, one person going from chapter to chapter. I did it in a way where one person inspires the next chapter and leads the rebellion. And even the character of Miss Clara, which is in the Charity Butler chapter, you know, she's complicated as well.
Sure.
And because she's a woman, she is not a full citizen. So I agree with you. The beauty is when I talk about this book and the variety of people that see themselves in Josephine or Luke or Henry or Charity, that lets me know that I did my job.
You included Bible citations as footnotes. You just got me thinking through this whole thing, Clay, because I'm reading the book. Again, the book is Burn Down Master's House. And I'm thinking, okay, that's a choice. He did that for a reason. You might not see that in a typical work of fiction. Maybe 10 times, 12 times. I don't know how many times it was there. But again, why did you do that?
You know, it does go to my nonfiction work. My last book, The Grift, The Downward Spiral, Black Republicans, was a nonfiction work. It was a New York Times bestseller. I just thought it was important to show the citations and the footnotes, even down to the Bible, right? And because faith is up for so much debate, where we are right now as well, it's always been that way, but we really see religion being weaponized in real time. And so I wanted to remind people where these quotes come from. And also, there is an interesting battle that I have between Christianity and more indigenous or African spirituality. And so I wanted to show where it came from. And I love that you brought that up, because what is this thing? You know, what is this? How are these things serving us? You know, these lines that we quote, do we know where they come from? Do we know what they mean? And these souls, when they quote these lines, they have their own interpretation. So I thought it was really important for our scripture folks who might be reading.
The book, I should say, sort of outlines a series of rebellions, if you will, or at least starts with one, with the fire burned down Master's house. And it talks about the violent behavior of the slaveholders toward the souls, mm-hmm. but also about the violence from those souls to the slaveholders.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, listen, I titled the book Burn Down Master's House because, despite what people like Kanye West said, that slavery was choice, enslaved folks were fighting back constantly. In some parts of the South, they had to put in arson laws because there were so many houses being burned down. There were so many poisonings happening. Now they would repress these stories because they were afraid, Steve, that if people heard stories of rebellion, that more might rebel. But this was happening all throughout the South, right? So for me, when I think about when the tables are churned, I think of it less as violence. And I understand why folks feel like it is violence, but I see it more as a ritual. I see it as a battle between good and evil. I see it as a battle of morality. So when, I don't want to give any too much away, but when these rebellions happen, it is, they are releasing something. It's not just, I'm going to kill you. It is, there's one scene where someone's eyes get taken out. They want to make sure, even by the grace of Satan, if you live, you will never be able to see again, because right. they saw somebody else's eyes get taken out. The idea of using poisoning, think about how enslaved people are making these elaborate meals and they don't get a piece of it, right? I also have a black enslaver in the book as well. So it is, I understand why folks say violent, but I see it more as a ritual. And in order to push out this demon, if you will, we have to end the bloodline, end the DNA. And it's not as simple as a gunshot. It is almost operatic. It is a stage. It is churning the tables. It is reminding them of all that you've done, that we must abolish your soul. And in order to do that, it is coming from a higher power, from our ancestors, and therefore it becomes a ritual, not just violence.
Well, I love the idea that you brought up earlier in the interview, that these stories should be unifying for this country.
Yeah.
Not divisive, because there are stories and I don't know, Clay, I could go on and on. I love the book. I love what your idea of it. I think it toward the end, or maybe in the closing. No, wait. In the close of your introduction, you tell readers to look for his or her own personal chains, mm-hmm. and do something about it. So the chains don't have to be as big as chains that would go around my ankles or my wrists, but we were all being held back by chains in one way or another, and could use this book as a call to action?
Oh, yes. Steve, I love that. Thank you for bringing that up. Listen, my hope with Burn Down Master's House is that it'll be an imprint on people, and it'll make them look inward. What is a house in your life you got to burn down? What are the chains in your life you have to break? When I was writing this book, I was very ill. I had esophagitis. And in the beginning, I didn't know what it was, and I was terrified. I know you've had your own health issues too, Steve.
Yeah, thank you.
And it was terrifying. So I was writing this book in a state of terror, not knowing what was happening to me. And fortunately, I'm okay and I'm great now. And it was just esophagitis, thank God. But also, my best friend was dying of lupus. She died May 25th, 2025. So I was dealing with grief, fear, health issues. I was in a very particular space writing this book. And I can recall writing that line thinking, I have to burn down my fear because it was holding me back. I have to burn down struggling with grief because it was holding me back. Burn down all my future-oriented thoughts and think of these people and these characters that, despite it all, despite illness, despite not knowing what freedom meant, despite chains and all of these things, they found their fire. They found their fire. So my prayer, my hope is this book in that way will imprint itself. And lastly, I'll say my friend who passed away of lupus, she was editing this book. She was a brilliant writer, but never decided to write in her hospital bed, Steve. And she was so proud of me. And I handed in the final copy about a week or two after she passed away. So there is so much in here, so much just blood and soil and root and souls in this book that I'm really proud. And I'm just happy that it's resonating with folks.
No, you just gave me chills, Clay. Clay Kane, Burn Down Master's House. I don't want to take any more of your time because I want you to get your rear end back to your writing desk and give me something more.
Yes, I know. I know. Thank you. Thank you, Steve. Listen, it's an honor to talk with you. You are a radio legend. You've just done incredible work. And I was so happy when I heard that you were interested in talking with me.
Oh, that's
really
nice.
Means a lot. Thank you so much.